Hey, it's today, July 28th. I don't know. My worst Krista impression. She's glamping this week, so it's just us. Downvote.
Yeah. A lot of people are going to say they missed the yawning. I think she did better last week. I wonder the insomniac lifestyle, how does that translate into camping? Because it's dark.
Maybe it's because you get so exhausted that you can't just possibly continue. Mm. I for one think that Krista is very important as our sort of canary in the existential dread coal mine.
So should we get her one of those really intense stair climbing exercise machines?
That would probably be a lot of fun.
Of course, she doesn't have the calories to expend. She'd have to increase her food intake dramatically. So did you see... I don't think I put it in there, but I was going to. I did put it in there. We'll talk about it in the nonsense section. Anyway, let's start out with a Jeep Pie. We like to start out with a Jeep Pie, if at all possible, or the FCC. Here's one that it's ridiculous, and the headline is very ridiculous. When you dig into it, I feel like I'm almost on his side, but not quite. But this is a situation, and you see this constantly if you look, take a step back and look from the outside at government. It's the old create the problem and then solve the problem. That treadmill that they put us on.
A Jeep Pie urges states to cap prison phone rates after he helped kill those rates. After he helped kill FCC caps. This is from Ars Technica. Basically, the FCC said, whoa, we've got these caps on prison phone rates. Like, you call your cousin, Vinny, who's locked up, and, talk to him a little bit. It's going to cost $3 an hour. I mean, $3 a minute. Something crazy like that. And it's a little bit of a racket. The prison industrial complex here in America, a little out of control. A huge percentage of our population is incarcerated for no good reason in a lot of cases. And the fact that they have to pay through the nose, I mean, it's just, it's crazy. But he said, we don't have jurisdiction. We don't have jurisdiction to do this. This is states' rights. States have to do this. But the states aren't prepared to manage things like telephones.
Oh, they certainly are, and they're in bed with the private prison. Now, he says we need to make a distinction. He's talking about interstate. Interstate is federal jurisdiction. Intrastate. So if you're doing long-distance calls outside of the state, it's different than doing prison calls inside of the state.
And yet the way that most VOIP systems work, your local phone call is just as likely to go outside the state and then back in again as it is to stay inside the state.
Now, this has to do with, states' rights and stuff like that. And normally I would agree with that because you could just leave if you don't like the state that you're in. This is kind of unique.
Yeah.
Because you can't. And you often get moved around in the prison system a lot.
Yeah.
So you never know where you're going to be. It's not up to you. And, they have video calls now, too, in prison.
That's going to cost more.
Oh, so much more. I think those can go up to like $10 a minute.
That is a lot. That is if you're poor and in prison, that's a double whammy, and that's not how it should be.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. So, yeah, he's begging the states to make the change, put a cap on it. I don't know if they have any motivation to. The prison population is a population that doesn't have a lot of advocacy.
Yeah, we've culturally eliminated anybody that's like, why would you ever want to associate with a hardened criminal?
So, probably screwed. I put this story in next because, of course, a Jeep Pie, you got to associate him with Trump, right? And when it comes to a Jeep Pie, I think maybe one of the only things we can give him credit for during his reign is that he has kind of taken a hard stance on the robocall, annoying text messages thing. Anybody would have done that. It's any sane person in charge of the FCC would focus on that because it's a plague on all of us. But at least he's doing something. But you got to wonder if maybe he regrets some of those decisions based on this headline.
According to Ars Technica, the headline is Trump campaign angry that cell carriers blocked spammy texts to voters. Trump campaign claims political texts were sent manually and thus not illegal. That seems unlikely for the sheer volume of text messages that were sent that were blocked by carriers.
Well, do you think they mean that like one person actually keyed it in on a single handset, which then broadcast to every phone?
That seems unlikely.
I don't know, but they are still arguing about this. Now, they did get blocked, but he says that they should not have been blocked, and he's very angry about it.
I don't want any political spam. Any spam at all, of any kind.
It's the darkness, when you really think about this, you know, like just sort of for a moment, look at the meta of it. The darkness is that there's a non-trivial amount of people whose vote can be swayed by text message.
Wow.
Well, why else would it matter?
Right? I was just thinking about the threshold of, like, what would I accept for an unsolicited text message? And that's probably, like, 16 terabyte hard drives on sale for $100, first come, first serve. And it's like, okay, I might tolerate an unsolicited text message for something like that, maybe.
But they could still trick you with that. Because once you showed up, they'd be like, oh, we're all sold out. We got these other deals.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fraud.
So, also in the news, Mr. Trump, we have some of these groups that are supposed to, they're nonprofits, and they're supposed to do various things like, for example, this is a radio, was it Radio China and Radio something? They're government funded, but they're supposed to, you know, like Radio Free Europe and Radio Free Asia. They spread democracy. And
they're in the same group as the kind of the nonprofit that we reported on a couple of weeks ago, the Open Technology Fund, where the director resigned and said, hey, somebody's trying to turn us political, and we're just all about open technology.
All right, well, so they do get funding, and they get appointees based on people in power. So they're not elected, they're government-funded, but they're nonprofit, and there's kind of some conflicting things there, and suddenly there's a lot of conflict because many of these organizations have been very critical of Trump.
Appeals court blocks Trump's Trump appointees' takeover of web nonprofit. So this is Politico, and I think this is probably the least inflammatory headline. And what has happened is a judge has said, no, for the Open Technology Fund, that is not really a media organization. Yeah, it's government funded, but they're a nonprofit. And the charter that allows appointees doesn't say anything about something like the Open Technology Fund. It's really just the media companies. And so while the appointees might be okay for the you know, Radio Free China, which is supposed to get, you know, apolitical news into China, which seems very weird that this is all of a sudden very political. But the Open Technology Fund does not operate that way. And so the replacement board of directors has been fighting legally with the current board of directors. And it looks like the current board of directors is going to continue to operate the Open Technology Fund because the judge found that just replacing everybody unilaterally is probably going to harm the mission of that nonprofit.
They tried to get the owner of the building they were leasing to let them in to remove the other people. That's how far they went. It's incredible. I don't now they did say that this organization was critical of Trump, but I guess they just like in public speaking or whatever.
I think it must have been the story that we reported a couple of weeks ago where the Open Technology Fund director resigned and said our mission is to further open source stuff and things like Tor, I guess, is what's implied. It doesn't come right out and say Tor, but something like a tool like Tor, which could be used inside of China to get past the Great Firewall of China. Things like Iran for getting speech and data out of the country. Whether that's for espionage or just reporting on, you know, what's going on the ground, I don't know. I couldn't say. But
well, the whole bar thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not exactly open technology. Well, it's open.
Yeah.
But it's open to the wrong people.
But that the director, I guess, resigned and said they are encouraging us to go with commercial software instead of open software, and that is antithetical to what we're supposed to do, so I'm resigning.
We'll see. Now, this was so the first judge ruled with Trump. This is an appeal. I don't know if there are further appeals, but I imagine there'll be more to this.
What a mess. I don't think the Open Technology Fund, I don't think they should mess with that one because of its track record and the people involved.
The people who used to be involved.
Oh, they're trying.
Wanzhou? Wanzhou? How do you know?
Wanzhou. I don't know.
Yeah. Ming Wanzhou. She is the Huawei executive who has been stuck in Canada awaiting extradition or not.
It's like a really dark version of the Tom Hanks movie, The Terminal.
And her lawyers are making probably one of her final pleas to reason here to try and stop this.
Globalnews.ca reports Ming Wanzhou asks for extradition case to be stayed, says the U.S. misled Canada. So I read this because I thought there was something really insane and juicy here. And it turns out there is a little bit.
Well, the quotes are pretty damning, I think.
But, you know, her lawyers basically tried everything to, you know, everything that would stick. But I think the best argument here is that, you know, HSBC, I think, was it HSBC?
Yeah.
Said, we had no idea we were trading with Iran. But there's a lot of evidence that her lawyer submitted that shows that HSBC, yes, indeed, they did know that they were trading with Iran. And this was how business is done. And so all of a sudden it's like, whoa, wait a minute. You mean HSBC is involved in yet another conspiracy?
Oh, no. Now, they do point out, her lawyers point out that this was heavily politicized, and they have quotes like this from Trump and a couple of other quotes where the Trudeau made some quotes about it, where she was kind of being horse-traded a little bit in the political process. And is that okay with the justice process? Probably shouldn't be.
I think it's really interesting. You know, like I say, it's always been a really interesting take on the way that you know, China deals with corruption. It's like here there's, you know, backroom deals and nobody talks about it and it's in hushed tones. And it seems like in China, it's like, we want to do business with Iran. How can we do business with Iran? And they're kind of upfront about it. And it's like, oh, we need intermediaries and, you know, third parties and other companies that are owned by subsidiaries. Okay, we'll set that up so we can do business with Iran. Whereas here, it's like for plausible deniability, it's like, I had no idea that intermediary was doing business with Iran.
There are a lot of parts of the world that I think Americans, our culture just doesn't have this. And to be told no often just means give me a bribe.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Yeah. This whole thing is a big cultural misunderstanding.
Exactly. And that's not, it's not a big deal in some parts of the world.
You know, if you're on the Chinese side, you got to be looking at this being like, but all these American companies are doing business with Iran. I don't understand. You can go to Tehran and get Nikes. I don't understand.
So this is funny because when you think about this headline, you have to think about it in terms of, you know, the Barr thing we were talking about earlier, where they absolutely want to destroy encryption. But that's for you. This is not for you.
The Washington Post reports that the U.S. has hatched a plan to build a quantum internet that might be unhackable. The new network would sit alongside the existing web, offering a more secure way to send and process information. Yeah, they're not talking about you.
You don't get this. There was going to be military installations and government buildings and stuff like that. This is using the old quantum entanglement stuff. Now, if you're wondering how does that work over distance, you need a quantum relay. And if you're saying, wait, quantum relay, that doesn't exist, you're right. It doesn't.
But it soon will.
Will it?
I'm surprised it wasn't mentioned in this article, but there were a couple other things that happened the last week in terms of a movement to get quantum secure versions of SSH protocols out there. So like RSA, asymmetric encryption is especially vulnerable, or thought to be especially vulnerable to quantum encryption. But we have better algorithms. We just need to make those the default for things like Secure Shell. And so Tiny SSH and some other ones have implemented those kinds of things. So the whole quantum web thing, we'll see.
Doesn't exist. Maybe someday we'll probably be dead. Well,
the hardened algorithms exist. It's just no one's using them yet.
This, you know, I didn't notice on the first read of this. This is our good friend Kyle Wiggers. He's an intrepid reporter. So this is just another of many of the states that are getting in line with this. It's happening pretty slowly, but I wonder if we will ever see full coverage of the country.
New York bans the use of facial recognition in schools statewide. Well, I mean, this is a little bit of a nothing burger. We shouldn't be using facial recognition to begin with, but children are growing and the shape of their face changes. So most software is not built to deal with that.
They spent $1.4 million to outfit this school with cameras and facial recognition. Only be told, you can't do that anymore. It's tax dollars. It's tax dollars.
Should our educators know better? They would if they watched the Level 1 news.
They argue that, so they say that with their system, there is no chance that data of actual children is being kept. It only triggers on, like, you know, known sex offenders and predators and stuff, unknown people, Stranger Danger. But from what we've seen with, you know, database security and stuff like that, can we ever really truly trust a system like that?
I mean, how long before we're covering a really embarrassing story about the cameras going off and it ends up being race related and then, oh, whoopsie.
Yeah. Well, that they, of course, brought up the whole, like, people of color facial recognition thing. That's a standard argument.
They're going to fix
it.
That.
Yeah. I hate it when they use that argument because they will get better at that. It will happen. And then if all of our protection is based on that, that is it's built on matchsticks. Don't use it. It's true, but we can't depend on it to protect us. And Apple is facing a lot of scrutiny. Actually, all the big tech companies right now are just week after week. We get more and more reports. And this week is no different.
States probe Apple for potential customer protection violation. So it's Texas, but the Texas Attorney General, I think, said according to this article, the quote was like, it sure does seem like we're going to be filing charges pretty soon now.
Yeah. They expect litigation. This is not something that they announced. This is a Freedom of Information request. Somebody ferreted this out. But when they were asked for a comment, they did not shy away from saying, yeah, it's coming.
We're going to talk more about this in the business section because a component of this is the App Store structure and what Apple charges developers in terms of commissions.
And when it comes to the big tech companies, they're being dragged in front of Congress, I think actually tomorrow as of the recording of this, right? Isn't there a big one?
Yeah.
And
we'll be reporting on that next week.
When they're up there, they're not afraid of a little dry snitching.
Microsoft president raised Apple issues to the House antitrust group. What? Yeah, so Microsoft has got the Microsoft Store. You might have heard of it. It has some apps. Not a lot of people use it. And they're like, I don't understand it. It meets all of the same technical criteria as the Apple App Store, but no one wants to use the Microsoft App Store. We literally are having to pay developers to run their apps on the Microsoft App Store. And the only difference between this and the Apple App Store is Microsoft versus Apple. It's like we can't even charge the same commission structure and get people to use the Microsoft App Store. Clearly, Apple is doing something anti-competitive.
He also had a fun quote where it was like, you know, back when you came after us for antitrust, we weren't doing anything this bad.
Can you imagine, like, the revolt of Microsoft was like, you're literally not going to be able to install applications on your Windows laptop unless it comes from the Microsoft Store, and you can't turn that off.
I have that Xbox game subscription thing, and it needed an update, but you can't just update it in the app. You have to go through the Windows thing. It took me like 5 minutes to find it. Didn't load correctly.
What
is this? I should cancel that. The big election's coming up, in case you haven't heard. In case you're... Well, I mean, we're all living under a rock these days,
right? It's nearly August. Where has 2020 gone? 2020, the year that time forgot.
So, got to get out there and vote, I guess. I don't know. I'm not one of these people that's like, everybody should vote. If you don't really understand anything about what's going on, don't vote. I mean, what good are you going to do? What criteria are you going to use? But if you work for a lot of big companies, they have to give you the ability to vote. And Apple is making maybe a little bit of extra concession this year.
Apple to give employees paid time off to go vote or volunteer up to 4 hours of paid time off, including like the retail workers and the Apple store workers, although a lot of Apple stores are closed right now.
4 hours to volunteer, I guess, is based on how far you have to travel. You're going to volunteer for like 1 hour.
Well, if you don't have to travel very far, like if you live in the city, it's, you know, 15-minute commute, you know, you could take the whole day off, but you could get paid for 4 hours.
They could just close on election day.
It probably should be a national holiday, in all honesty.
Isn't it? It's a federal holiday.
Federal holiday. But, well, yeah. Is it?
I think. So anyway, if you work at Apple, take your 4 hours. I don't know if you have to prove that you actually did. You know, you could just like go hang out or something. Although, where are you going to hang out? Because every place is closed, right? Yeah. Just stand outside and smoke.
Because of the thing.
Make like a really lackluster political sign and put that in your car. And if they question you, you'd be like, no, look at my sign.
I really wish more companies would do this because there are crazy people that are going to spin this as Apple is thinks their employees are going to vote a certain way is why they're doing this.
I think they will. Do you think there's a lot of Trump support in the Apple ecosystem?
I think if there were, they would be afraid to say anything because of the culture.
Oh, yeah. The conservative people are definitely spooked into silence right now, which is kind of funny because they were a loud voice.
But also very sad.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. It's unfortunate when either side of the aisle is silenced before you...
If we didn't have a two-party system, maybe we could have a party of, like, reasonable rationality. It's like, I want the party of reasonable rationality. And all I hear is owls screeching at one another at this point.
Like, the party of reasonable rationality, quickly, the loudest voice would be like, we have to kill the irrational.
You know, only thing that will not be tolerated is intolerance.
We got a comment like that in a section, and it's like, if you tolerate intolerance, you can't do that. But then when you don't tolerate intolerance, you become the intolerant. Circle back around.
There's a famous paper about that, and it's like literally the only thing that we can't. And there's a Monty Python skit even with it, and it's like literally the only thing we can't tolerate is intolerance. Which makes sense.
And the moment you cross over. So, yeah, let's kill all the intolerant people, and there'll be one guy left. And hopefully, the moment before he takes his own life, he sees the reason of it all. Or she.
And the simulation ends. And then it's like, okay, let's try, simulation number 4 billion.
The worst ending. Google is attempting to get Fitbit. They want to gobble it up under their horrible umbrella. And boy, when you think about a company like Google and the way that they gobble up all your data and process it and figure out things about you, your heart rate could be a big data point, right? He's not having it.
The EU demands major concessions from Google over Fitbit deal. Pledge required that health data will not be used to improve search engine. So there was a previous pledge. Like, I guess the way this deal went down is that the deal was happening so fast that EU regulators were concerned they wouldn't be able to slow it down enough. So Google just preemptively said, we're not going to use it to improve the search engine. And that it sounds like the EU regulators went, okay, well, we want that and some more stuff. Like, they weren't expecting Google to capitulate to not improving the search engine that quickly. So they actually want a lot more demands for not aggregating your health data or really doing much of anything with it.
They do point out that the EU regulators are in a rough spot, at least, according to that website, because if Google just says no, then they've stood in the way of a big business deal, and that's going to come back. There's going to be a big backlash among the businesses to them. So I suppose government should operate as if it weren't under siege by business, but this is the real world. And in the real world, some people are more valuable than others, or at least perceive themselves to be, and often have the power to make that a reality. And that is certainly the case over in the red part of the world.
Russian elite give an experimental vaccine for the thing that we are currently all under since April. April, yeah. Officials and executives given early access during testing. Russia aims to begin mass inoculations as early as September. I didn't understand how this could possibly be safe, but the article says that because this vaccine is based on the technology of existing vaccines, the risk was seen as relatively low. The article also doesn't really say how effective it is.
Well, yeah, I don't know if any of those people have gotten it or not, but they took the cold virus, which is the same kind of virus that we can't say the word, and they took that spike that makes it so sticky and viral and spliced it on there and then made that into the vaccine. So
will your immune system detect that as, or will it just be another case of the common cold?
Now, they point out that they've been running trials. They ran one of their trials on the military. You can't do that here, although we have in the past.
We have a lot in the past.
So once that passed, the only people that were allowed to get it were people who volunteered for the trial. So you could go and be like, oh, I'll be part of a medical trial. You know what? And it just so happened that a lot of the really rich and powerful people qualified for the medical trial and got the vaccine. Wonder what that cost. Also, over in Russia, they might have some new technology now. We're not sure exactly what happened here, but they had a spacefaring device. I guess it was a satellite itself. and it went and visited another satellite very closely.
We got pictures of that. I'm surprised they declassified and released pictures of that.
And so, according to Russia, that was just a friendly visit. Just going to go up there, say hi, take some pictures, take some selfies. The UK, U.S. and U.K. governments have other ideas.
The U.S. and U.K. say that Russia fired a satellite weapon in space. They didn't really give a lot of details other than it looks like it's the same sort of satellite that shadows other satellites, and it may have been used to take out a satellite.
But it was Russia's own satellite. So,
was it a test?
No one knows for sure.
Were they red teaming in space?
But
red team in space. I've got an idea for a new YouTube show.
They definitely point out that, and we are one of the countries that has a satellite weapons program. So we're not alone here, but they're saying that maybe we need treaties because we have treaties for all the weapons on Earth. Do we need space treaties? Right now, I think there's kind of a treaty. I don't know if Russia's part of it, but it's just like, hey, listen, space is peace. Let's be peaceful in space. You can go up there and make money, but you can't do no shooting. No one's going to follow that.
No. I think it's not going to be space. I think it's going to be Mars from the sound of our next article.
Well, a lot of different countries are trying to get to Mars, and we know that China has their burgeoning space program, and they actually have accomplished quite a bit recently. So they've set their eyes on the red planet.
China's Tianwen. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly.
Tianwen.
Mars rover rockets away from Earth. So it's going to get there in February of 2021. It's it was like what the name means, like Heaven March or something like that.
It's going to be on the planet. Going to be a rover.
Well, it's got a really interesting feature, which is it can orbit Mars for a while to make sure the weather is okay to actually land on Mars. So they'll be able to, like, remote control it.
You think that it'll ever have an encounter with Discovery or a Curiosity? Which one's still up there?
Curiosity.
Would that be a tense moment?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't think it's landing anywhere near the same place, but they're...
well, they could screw it up.
Yeah, they're going to gather their own scientific data.
What if they fall in love?
What if they find incontrovertible proof of microbial life on Mars?
Well, China's not the only one that's heading to Mars. A slightly less ambitious mission, but still impressive because it is the first from this part of the world. Asterix, not really launching from that part of the world.
The United Arab Emirates successfully launches the Hope Probe, the Arab world's first mission to Mars. A rocket carrying the unmanned probe known as Al Amal in Arabic joins China and the U.S. in a race to the red planet. It's not really a race. We're all headed there too with our own scientific instrumentation. This launch from NASA, I think.
A race, you say? Who's already there?
A space race?
Who's already there? Who's been there? Who's got several dead robots up there? Japan. Launch from Japan.
Oh, it's launched from Japan. Okay. So, there you go.
Pretty cool, though.
There's actually a lot of space news this week. Like, a lot of space news. And some of it, we unilaterally moved to the nonsense section because it's literally insane.
Space news is inherently tech news, but it kind of doesn't fit with the theme in most cases. Moving on to security, those unsecured databases, man, you got to think, like, are people who are setting up unsecured databases just under a rock? How do they not hear these other stories?
They copy-pasted from Stack Overflow.
That's incredible. And so the newest one, this is one of those Batman-type attacks where it doesn't really do a lot of harm. It actually prevents harm in the long run.
Ongoing Meow attack has nuked 1,000 databases without telling anyone why. Ongoing attack hit unsecured data and leaves the word Meow as its calling card.
What do you think the field name and the table name is where they leave Meow?
It's just all the fields. It's like just first name Meow.
Table name Meow. Username Meow.
Yeah.
Field Meow. Value Meow.
Update table. just... It's like crazy.
You think it's uppercase or lowercase?
Probably lowercase.
So, yeah, they're just using Shodan, finding them, nuking them, and leaving Meow in their wake.
Well, that's one way to make sure that somebody's paying attention.
And although, if you're the kind of person who runs an unsecured database, are you the kind of person who has a backup of your database?
Nope.
A hard lesson, but an important one. if you were a if you were someone who depends on your GPS for your navigation, especially in an airplane, you had a little trouble this week.
Garmin services and production go down after a ransomware attack. Smartwatch and wearable maker Garmin is planning a multi-day maintenance window to deal with a ransomware incident. So literally, they're shut down. Now, these are GPS devices. The GPS component is still working, but any services that you depended on or customer service from the web, like downloading new maps, crap like that, none of that is going to work. Anything that you already have is going to continue to work, and the GPS component of it will continue to work, but you're not going to be able to like do flight planning or anything like that.
But not if you're using apps.
Yeah.
The apps were down.
Yeah.
And they did point out that aviation maps have to be updated every day per the FAA.
Oh, yeah. So anything like that is done.
Unfortunate. So if you are one of those people who are affected, you can't fly your plane, you can still fly your drone, right? That's something. You can still be in flight, kind of. But perhaps there's a new worry.
Popular Chinese-made drone is found to have security weakness. Researchers found a potential vulnerability in apps that help power the drones, highlighting the U.S. officials' concerns that, yeah, there's just... You never know if this is deliberate or if it's just cheaply made. Because, like, the Hikvision cameras, which I've done a lot of work on, they're just crazy insecure. But I don't know if it's malicious. I mean, there's a couple things with the way that the boot sequence works that makes me think it's a little malicious, at least because it's hard to reverse engineer. But... aside from that, it could just be incompetence.
It was DJI, the biggest drone maker. So, a lot of people have those. And is that data going back to China?
The DJI Osmo Action, super buggy software, super buggy. Don't know if incompetence or just don't care.
But we also have to remember that
it works great otherwise.
It is a requirement by Chinese law that if you are a company based in China, you must share any information with the Chinese government that they demand. Although, let's remember that Attorney Barr wants that for the U.S. Exactly the same thing.
What could possibly go wrong?
It's evil, but we need it.
China's doing this really horrible thing to all their companies. We want to do the same thing.
Look what those evil communists are doing over there. I've never been so erect. If you'll recall, the... Golden State Killer was caught by a DNA match. Not his DNA match, a close relative's DNA match. They were able to put it together and be like, hey, wait a minute, this is close enough. Look at his family members. They tracked him down. In the wake of that, a lot of people said, hang on. Are you looking at my DNA? Are you looking at the cops searching my DNA? So this is this big thing. And it was like, okay, listen, we're going to make it an opt-in feature. If you don't opt in, we're not going to let the cops look at your DNA. If you forget to opt out, we're definitely going to sell that to the cops. And people were like, okay, but you're definitely not going to show them, right? It's like, no, don't worry about it. But do we trust them to secure that?
No. Security breach exposed more than 1 million DNA profiles of a major genealogy database. First GED match, the DNA database that helped us identify the Golden State Killer, was hacked. Then email addresses from its users were used in phishing attack on other leading genealogy sites. I'm here to tell you that it doesn't matter if this was a hack or not. We've got those secret courts with the secret warrants. You could get a just like LavaBit for email, you could get a secret warrant and be like, we have to have a copy of your database. It is a matter of national security because we've got a terrorist's DNA at this one location, and we're going to try to find them in this giant, you know, you can tell us if you've got a match in your database. That's all you got to do. And that absolutely will happen if it has not already happened. But now it's like, oh, you've got access to this database on a commercial thing. Law enforcement can just buy access to it. And if they won't sell, then they can insist on it with the NSL warrants.
And I'm sure if they found out about this before it was fixed, they went ahead and just grabbed everything.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
I mean, Customs and Border Protection is already doing this with license plate reader data. I think we've got that story coming up later. So it's like, we want to know this car that we saw that was maybe doing something suspicious when it crossed the U.S.-Mexico border. We want a history of everywhere it's been in the United States. Oh, we can get that from license plate readers commercially without a warrant. We can just buy it. And that's legal.
So don't voluntarily send your DNA. I don't care if you've got nothing to hide. What about your relatives? Think of your nefarious nephews. Apple has been known to not react all that well when quote-unquote hackers or security researchers find things about the iPhone that they don't want to be out there. They do have a bounty program, but a lot of people aren't crazy about how that works. There's a lot of rules. I think they're trying to do something to fix that. However, I estimate there will be a lot more rules to get on this list, wouldn't you say?
Yes. Apple will start sending special devices to iPhone hackers. Apple officially launched the iPhone Research Device Program and will send iPhone hackers and security researchers special devices that will make it easier for them to find bugs and vulnerabilities. So things like the bootloader and some of the other stuff. Basically, the device is so locked down that it's hard to get past the initial outer layers. But if you can get past the initial outer layers and find other vulnerabilities, then that would actually be useful to Apple. So they'll let them in the first few layers of security so that they can do more analysis of deeper layers, which will result in an overall more secure device. Now, if Apple's going to do this correctly, they're going to shower these researchers with riches beyond the dreams of avarice, and that might actually result in really secure devices.
It could also be illegal in some cases to get past some of those security pieces. So this, you know, gets rid of that whole weird, like,
gray area.
Yeah, we have a bug bounty, but if you do the bug bounty, we're going to sue you because you breached this other thing. No. Not a bad idea, but like I said before, I'm sure I would love to see the terms of service.
Yeah, it's going to be onerous.
Yeah,
super onerous. And then once, you know, once everybody's in this program, then Apple will like slowly poison the milk so that no one wants to do this anymore, and then they don't have to pay anybody.
And then when somebody gets caught hacking a regular iPhone, they'll be like, "Hey, listen, we gave you the option."
Yeah.
Phishing and, you know, that sort of thing is getting worse and worse. Of course, the big recent problem here was the Twitter thing. You know, it looked like Bill Gates wanted to give you money.
Bitcoin, to be specific.
But it wasn't really Bill Gates. I guess this wouldn't actually, that was a bad example because this wouldn't protect against that. But phishing, a lot of the times, the domain it's coming from is just slightly off. And unless you're paying a lot of attention, you're not going to notice it. They can make these very convincing looking. I mean, it's just HTML, right? They can do a very good job cloning the HTML. So Gmail has a solution.
Gmail is about to start testing verification like logos for email. BIMI adds authenticated logos for emails from participating companies. So when you get an email from Google or Steam or whatever, you'll know it's legit.
Because the logo will be, or the icon will be the logo. Regular users are not able to do that. Yay. And it does go through, what's the name of the email thing it uses to?
BINI?
DMARC.
Oh, DMARC.
Uses DMARC to check and make sure it's actually coming from where it says it's coming from. So it's not just an empty logo that even the hackers can use. Although, if they could figure out a way to get past that, oh boy, that'll be bad. The whole contact tracing app thing, whatever happened with that? Nobody's using it.
It's built in, like if you go into your Android settings on your phone, mysteriously you have a setting to turn that on.
Is it not on by default though?
No.
So a lot of promises were made. There was that whole argument. It's like the Apple Google way, centralized versus decentralized. And there was back and forth and we spent a ton of money. But I don't think anybody's using it. It's kind of not a big deal. Now, you can use it, and Google has promised total privacy. They're not going to use this data at all. But there is an interesting catch.
Google promises privacy with the virus app, but can still collect location data. Wait, what? They made this huge deal about not collecting your location data, and it wasn't needed, and we don't need it, and blah, 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 blah. And they still get my location data?
Now, I know what you're thinking. You're like, hey, it doesn't affect me. I've got my location data turned off.
Doesn't matter. It's on.
You have to turn it on to use this thing. You know this thing that's supposed to save all of our lives? They won't let you use it.
That they were telling us they didn't need a location data? What's happening?
So they're being criticized for that. Rightly so. I mentioned the big Twitter thing. So if you're not aware of that, some people hacked into some Twitter control panels and they got some high profile people like Musk and Gates and several other people. And they said, hey, send some Bitcoin to this address. I'm going to send you double back, which is such a stupid scam. It's the Nigerian scam.
Yeah.
But just, you know, from a trusted name, why would they need you to send them? There's transaction fees. So
that had some problems, but Coinbase was just beating their chest all week because Coinbase has some of the most draconian security. Like, just getting into that, it's like, I want to buy Bitcoin, and Coinbase is like, send me the umbilical cord of your first child in duplicate.
Yeah.
God, there's so many times I've wanted to buy a dip, and it's just, I couldn't even get in. They're like, not 48 hours, come back. We don't trust you at all. So now they're feeling really good about it.
Coinbase says it prevented over 1,000 customers from sending $280,000 worth of Bitcoin to the Twitter hackers. This is really kind of impressive when you consider that the Twitter hackers only managed to get about $140,000 worth of Bitcoin.
And it was a 30-minute window.
Yeah. So, good job, Coinbase, I guess.
Yeah, I do. I feel secure about my Coinbase account. I just... sometimes I would like to buy Bitcoin, and they're like, no, not today, brother.
It does say that the first six or seven people that sent that address Bitcoin were able to do so. So they didn't stop everybody.
But it was a very small amount.
Yeah, and then it was like, that's weird. It shouldn't be doing this, and then no one else could do that.
I like that there were people out there that was like, I've only got $20, but I want to get that $40. Yeah, why not? I'll take the risk. This article is disturbing, if only because it shows the scope and the, I guess, audacity of some of these people. A real misunderstanding of how the internet works, for sure.
Yeah. CNBC or NBC News is reporting, the headline is, Inside the Surveillance Software Tracking Child Porn Offenders Across the Globe. Child Protection System helps police triage these kinds of cases, and as the system expands, it's facing growing privacy concerns. So... they were able to, you know, monitoring for things like MD5 sums and hashes and that kind of thing, they were able to detect a lot of unusual activity at these IP addresses. And it's very, the language the people that are familiar with the system uses is very concerning, because they're like, well, we detect, you know, some kind of activity here and there, but then when we detect a lot of activity, it's when we go to these particular IP addresses. And they picked up somebody, and, you know, they pled guilty and all this kind of stuff, and it's a huge mess, and it is super disturbing. But at the same time, it's like, is this going to be the norm for the type of surveillance that we're going to see on the internet?
So what they do is they find examples of this kind of thing. And like you say, they'll do some kind of checksum or something, so they don't have to look at it every time. And then they'll go to peer-to-peer, and they'll see who is seeding that on peer-to-peer or downloading it. And this is not a government agency that's doing it. They're kind of like I don't know if they're a nonprofit or whatever, but then they'll give that information to the police. That's not enough for a warrant. But then the police, and this is where it gets a little bit disturbing in terms of rights, if those people are like working with children or something like that, that is enough for a warrant, which is weird. But, yeah, this is a great time for a pro-criminal tip, but I'm not going to give that one out. Go ahead and keep peer-to-peer in your child porn. You deserve to get caught.
Yeah.
This one, I was actually going to pull this one out, but when it was like, you know what, people need to be reminded of this, and I have to agree. You can't remind people enough.
It goes so good with that earlier story.
The darkness that is the reality of our government.
Ars Technica reports that Customs and Border Patrol does an end run around warrants and simply buys license plate reader data. So if you already left a comment on the other story when I was talking about it, which was citation needed, here you go. It's like, oh yeah, we want to know where all of the cars are from with license plate data.
This might be a cab, because they do have deals with some cab companies to mount these plate readers. So when they drive you to Walmart, as they're going through the parking lot, they're making a couple extra bucks pulling scanning in those plate license numbers.
Plates. Yeah, it's a commercial thing. It's completely legal. It's totally okay under the law.
And you are in public, and it is legal to photograph whatever's in public. So
the logical conclusion is that your every move in public is public domain, which is scary. And building a database is perfectly legal, which I think most people would say there's something wrong with that. But
yeah. And a lot of people who will, you know, rail against this idea that all car activity is going to be tracked and the black boxes are in there, which they already are, they ignore this kind of thing. But we are basically already under surveillance everywhere we go.
Yeah.
So, and these aren't just in parking lots. Sometimes they're mounted to you know, like warning lights and stuff like that, or just street lamps or whatever, so you can just drive by them constantly.
It's trivial to connect all the dots.
Especially if you have a company that's doing it for you and you just give them tax money. It's not your money. It's my money. And finally, this one is a terrifying story because of how easy it is. I think they said 18 out of 25 tested devices were susceptible to this. And if you travel a lot, this has to be something that's really in the back of your mind.
Bad power attack corrupts fast chargers to melt or set your device on fire. Attackers can alter the firmware of fast charger devices to deliver extra voltage and damage connected equipment. Woo!
Letting the smoke out.
Yeah.
As my engineering teacher always used to say. Yeah. The magic smoke. You can load this on a phone, or you can just have a USB device that is designed to feed it into the charger. Plug it in for 25 seconds or so. Move on with your day. That charger is now a terrible time bomb.
Yeah, for reprogrammable voltage controllers. Woo!
So they did not give a list, but boy, that would be a valuable list, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Which of the 18 out of 25 were not affected by this thing? Because those are the ones you want to get, for sure. Someone, there's a product idea. A tester. Test if you can affect the firmware.
Test if you can, if the charger is going to do anything bad. A fake phone dongle. Man. There was a guy that did the USB cable that had a switch as to whether you just wanted voltage and data or just voltage, and Google bought thousands of them.
Well, you could do both. You could do one that, like, you plug it in, and it detects if it's trying to overvolt. Or, you know, it could have a lot of heat sink in it. Or one that simply tries to touch the firmware and reports whether or not that fast charger's firmware is secure or not.
Mm. Neat.
That's all we got. Chris is not here to say goodbye. How do we ever actually end the news?
Hopefully you enjoyed the news. Definitely join us on Patreon or Floatplane. And we've also got a lot of Linode tutorials. Linode did a lot of sponsorship this month, so go check out the tutorials, because we did like some stuff on how to set up your own. You can get a really cheap Linode, like the one that's $5 a month, and use that as a proxy for your home internet connection, which gives you a little bit more security. And even if you don't have a static IP address at home, it'll all just magically work. I did the tutorial on that, so check that out. See you next week. I mean, tomorrow.